It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to MPBN Radio. Ahead on Maine Things Considered this evening, the federal government says it may cut funding for Maine's food stamp program. They say the state is apparently violating recipients' civil rights. And Maine's revenues are up. Those stories in your Maine newscast just ahead. But first, national and world news from NPR. At 5:32, I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. Federal officials say Maine risks losing funding to administer its food stamp program unless it makes clear to recipients that having their photos placed on electronic benefit transfer cards is optional. In a statement, Health and Human Services Commissioner Mary Mayhew says the Fed's objective in coming to Maine was nothing more than an attempt to undermine the state's ongoing efforts to reduce fraud, waste, and abuse in welfare programs. More on this story coming up. The state fire marshal's office says the mobile home fire that killed a mother and her three young children in Caribou yesterday was started by one of the children who died in the blaze. Investigators say Trenton Delisle, who would have been four next week, set fire to items in the living room. Officials say earlier in the day the boy had set fire to a book inside the kitchen oven. The fire was extinguished by the boy's aunt before she walked her son to a nearby bus stop. State Fire Marshal Joe Thomas says juvenile fire starters are a huge problem in Maine.
If there is anybody, whether it be a parent, a guardian, a caregiver, a teacher, whomever might have exposure to the child, that they believe or know that there is fire behavior being exhibited, they should call their local fire department or call this office.
Thomas says there are resources available across the state to counsel, educate, and treat children fascinated by fire. The University of Maine system was today recognized by the federal government for its leadership in cybersecurity education. UMS says it's the first public university system in the nation to be designated by the National Security Agency as a center for academic excellence in information assurance education. Glenn Wilson is cybersecurity professor at the USM Cyber Lab, which opened in August.
Right now, we understand that there are 300,000 cybersecurity job openings.
System officials say students at a number of UMaine campuses across the state can enroll in a first-of-its-kind cybersecurity degree program. In weather tonight, winds dying down, but very low temperatures in the single digits in the north to near 20 along the coastline. More overcast tomorrow in the north with a few flurries, breezy in western, central, and down east Maine with limited sun and a mountain flurry possible. Further south, bright morning sun fades in the afternoon, mid-20s north to upper 30s south. This is MPBN Radio. It's 25 minutes before 6. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. The state of Maine is being asked to clarify its new electronic benefits cards policy or risk losing funding from the federal government. At issue is a state policy designed to get food stamp applicants to get their photos taken for their EBT cards. But as Susan Sharon reports, the federal government is now warning that the policy raises significant civil rights and other concerns.
Since July, the State Department of Health and Human Services has been trying to encourage EBT users to get their photos taken as a way to eliminate fraud and abuse in the state's food stamp program. DHHS Commissioner Mary Mayhew stands by the policy, even though data suggests that fraud and abuse involves a small percentage of cases, less than 1/100 of 1% of them.
We know law enforcement here in Maine know that these cards are being trafficked for drugs and for cash, and this is a common sense reform to discourage illegal trafficking in these cards.
Mayhew describes the new photo policy as optional for food stamp applicants. But that's not what staff from the Federal Food and Nutrition Service found when they met with stakeholders in the program in August. In a letter to Commissioner Mayhew this week, Regional Administrator Kurt Messner said a review of state materials suggests that photos are required and that those who refuse then have their names and case numbers referred to the central office. Messner warns that there are significant civil rights concerns about the state's practice of taking photos of all non-applicant heads of households, and that it may violate the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
We are more than willing to look at any improvements that are necessary, but committed to moving forward with photos on EBT cards.
Administrator Messner says that any individual who applies for supplemental and nutrition benefits, known as SNAP, must be able to access the program without fear. He says his agency has previously advised the state about the potential chilling effect its policy could have on those applying for benefits. But Commissioner Mayhew says she does not believe putting photos on EBT cards has any more chilling effect on their appropriate use than photos on driver's licenses have on driving.
I mean, you'd think when you put a picture on the card that it's supposed to mean something.
Chris Hastad is with the low-income advocacy group Maine Equal Justice Partners, which has concerns about the state's policy. Hastad says the federal government discourages photos on EBT cards because it creates an unfair distinction between those who have them and those who don't, such as people using regular bank debit cards to make purchases, or who have family members borrow their cards to make purchases for them.
Retailers can't discriminate against people using these cards by asking to examine their cards when they're not asking you and I to have our cards examined, or by saying, gee, because your picture isn't on it, or you're not the person whose picture's on this, we can't allow you to use the card.
Hastad says Maine's policy also creates confusion for retailers, who may mistakenly believe that only EBT cards with photos are legitimate. Commissioner Mayhew says both Massachusetts and New York have implemented similar policies, and she says since July, 21,000 EBT users in Maine have elected to include their photos on their new cards, while only 100 have declined. Zach Hayden of the ACLU of Maine says he has concerns about the legality of the policy, but he also objects for other reasons.
Requiring photos to be included on the EBT cards is very expensive, and that additional expense doesn't buy you anything. It's not effective at fighting fraud, so there's really no good reason to go down this road.
The federal government is asking the state to clarify its policy and take corrective action in the next 45 days, or risk losing federal financial participation in the program, which serves 218,000 individuals and costs about $360 million a year. It's unclear how much of that funding, which comes entirely from the federal government, could be at risk. For MPBN News, I'm Susan Sharon.
The president's decision to act unilaterally on immigration last night and to spare nearly 5 million undocumented U.S. residents from deportation is not sitting well with Maine's two U.S. senators. Republican Susan Collins and independent Angus King say that while they support the president's felons, not families approach to deportation, they remain concerned about the process he's using and its potential for creating a partisan stalemate in a new Republican Congress. A.J. Higgins has more.
The president's plan is mainly directed at people who are believed to have entered the country illegally more than 5 years ago, but whose children are citizens or lawful permanent residents. As a result of executive orders, these individuals who pass background checks and paid fees will soon be able to seek relief from deportation and get work permits. The president also expanded eligibility for deportation relief to those who arrived in the U.S. as minors before 2010. Senator Angus King says he supports immigration reform, but not in the manner that the president has chosen.
I'm just concerned it may set the cause back.
King says the president is fully aware that the leaders in the new Republican-led Congress were opposed to his plans and should not have taken unilateral action.
We've got now a Republican House and a Republican Senate, so by definition, if we're going to have comprehensive reform, it's got to involve Republicans. And I'm just afraid that by sort of laying down the gauntlet and going it alone, it's going to make it more difficult to gain some consensus on this issue.
The president simply does not have the authority under the Constitution to unilaterally implement a new law. And that's essentially what he's doing.
Republican Senator Susan Collins says the president's actions this week have so angered some of her Republican colleagues that some are threatening a government shutdown over the issue. Collins says that would be disastrous.
I don't think anyone is realistically looking at shutting down government over this issue. That would be completely unfair to the American people and a disaster. I would hope that we would have learned that is a completely inappropriate response, one that I was never for, but some of my colleagues did pursue.
Collins says she supported bipartisan immigration reform legislation that passed the Senate last year, but that failed in the House. Democratic 1st District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree takes a different view of the president's actions on immigration and believes that he was well within his rights to offer a solution to the immigration problem after Congress dropped the ball.
Let's face it, the United States Senate passed comprehensive immigration reform 500 days ago, and the House of Representatives has refused to do anything about it. Every president over the last 50 years has taken executive action on immigration, and it certainly needs reform. Congress just is not getting it done.
The president's executive orders affect approximately 5 million people, leaving 6 million more who are in the country illegally in limbo. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
You're listening to Maine Things Considered on Maine Public Radio. Still to come on the program, Maine's Revenue Forecasting Committee increases its projections for this year and the next 2 years. But first, the City of Portland has announced the details of a task force on fire safety issues in light of the tragic fire on Noyes Street that claimed the lives of 6 young people earlier this month. City spokeswoman Jessica Grondin says the task force is made up of several city officials, including firefighters, as well as planning, housing, and inspection personnel, along with landlord representatives and tenant advocates.
Probably the biggest name of the task force is the technical consultant that we're bringing in from Boston, so Deputy Fire Chief Fleming. And he certainly has international expertise when it comes to these matters. He's been through similar tragedies.
The task force will examine city codes and ordinances, as well as review inspection policies and practices. And finally today, citing an improving economy, Maine's Revenue Forecasting Committee is upping its projections for the current fiscal year and for the next 2 years as well. Mal Leary has the story.
The committee has reprojected revenues from scores of sources, ranging from income and sales taxes to taxes on gambling and even revenues from fines. The panel expects about $45 million in additional revenues for the current budget year, and about $65 million more over the 2-year budget that starts July 1st. Mike Allen, Associate Finance Commissioner, chairs the committee.
The low energy prices, we just had a discussion about that, is certainly helping on the sales tax line. We think we're going to have a much better holiday shopping season than we've had in the past. And on the income tax side, we've just been seeing stronger revenues than we had been projecting.
Most sources of state funding are up at least a little or are unchanged, but gambling revenues, both from the state lottery and from the state's 2 casinos, have been below projections, and the forecast reflects the decline. Allen says the panel isn't sure why gambling revenues appear to be off.
We talked to other states that are heavily dependent on casino revenue. They're also seeing some decline, so it may just be that it has nationally reached some sort of a peak.
Lawmakers are pleased with the substantial increase in projections given several years of anemic growth. They're facing an estimated so-called structural budget gap of more than $460 million in the coming 2 years, attributed mostly to the effects of 2 laws, the long-ignored requirement that the state pay 55% of the cost of local schools, and the expiration of sales tax increases that were passed to balance the current budget. Republican Senator Garrett Mason of Lisbon Falls is the incoming majority leader.
The first thing we have to think of is the taxpayers, and then we can go from there on how best to use those resources, should we use them, for programs that need help. We have a lot of issues coming at us in this legislature.
On that point, Democratic Representative Peggy Rotundo of Lewiston, the co-chair of the Appropriations Committee, agrees. She says there is always far more demand to fund good programs that help people than there are dollars to pay for them.
These are decisions that we will make in a bipartisan way when we come together in January and start to work on the biennial budget. So I think it's premature to say what's going to happen with that money.
Associate Finance Commissioner Mike Allen says the projections are based on current tax law, and that could change as Congress considers extending several income tax breaks that expired at the end of 2013. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
And at 13 minutes before 6 o'clock, it's time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
Such biting northwest winds will settle quickly this evening. Only a few lingering clouds darting the sky throughout the mountains in the county. Frigid single digits north to near 20 along the shore roads. A warm front will advance towards New England tomorrow. This will spawn an overcast quickly across the northern third of Maine, with a few flurries late, breezy. Throughout western, central, and down east Maine, limited sun, a mountain flurry by dusk. Farther south, bright morning sun fading in the afternoon. Mid-20s north to upper 30s south. Milder Sunday. Northern and western Maine, considerable cloudiness, a mountain flurry or sprinkle. Expect a blend of sun and clouds for the rest of the state. Upper 30s north to upper 40s south. Rain and fog will occupy Monday, ending in the afternoon, Portland west and south. Balmy, mid-40s north, low 50s south. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And at 12 minutes before 6, that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Barbara Caridi, Tom Porter, and Ed Morin. I'm Nora Flaherty.